Truly want to echo the gratitude for all of you sticking around here and staying with us through this. I know I found the first two sessions to be so informative. So I hope that when we're all done here, we're going to have some great discussion if everybody is able to stay for the remainder. Just to give you a little bit of background on how we came to this issue, both trained in law, Kahan trained in ethics, me trained in public health. A few years ago, probably about 5 years ago, I sponsored a national conference at the law school where I was teaching, looking at a range of issues that impact policy around autism. And one of the most interesting things that emerged from that meeting was we focused primarily on children. Yet there were a number of transitioning students at the university where I was teaching at the time, DePaul University, who were from the university-based program that was providing assistance to students on the autism spectrum. And the questions that kept coming in after the conference were, well, what happens after school age? And Kahan and I, he was one of our speakers, we spent some time thinking about this, and then just about a year ago, we were invited to write a commentary for narrative inquiry in bioethics. And that commentary was to be based on 12 different narratives from parents, written on a very personal level, about what they were experiencing as their children, really running across the range of the autism spectrum, were experiencing on that move toward adulthood. And it was not just about the impact on their children, but the impact on the family. And as very involved caregivers, how they were going to relinquish that role as they were beginning to age and as their children were coming of age. And so that inspired us to start looking at what does exist and what policies do we need to start thinking about. And I'd like to share with you our objectives here today. I know it's a really short amount of time. So we're going to talk about the current challenges facing young adults with autism, some of them. We certainly can't cover all. We're going to identify the legal, ethical, and public health challenges that are raised by this transition from adolescence to adulthood. And then look at possible ways and some examples of improving educational employment opportunities for young adults with autism. So this quote really comes from our work in this commentary. And we recognize that the epidemic of young children with autism is giving rise to another epidemic, the rising number of young adults who are autistic. One of the authors mentioned in his essay that the system is in for a tsunami of new individuals needing medical care of all types, needing continued supports for housing and vocational training, communication, occupational, and physical therapy. I don't know if I'd use tsunami or snowball, but whichever term you'd use, there are a lot of changes ahead and things that, as public health professionals, we like to be prepared, we like to think about being prepared. Law, we're never prepared. In law, we're always reactive. But this is, I think, a great opportunity for public health to start driving some of that policy in work in developing a word we're all familiar with, preparedness, for what's about to come. So here's where I want to highlight some of those legal and ethical issues. As a child, there's entitlement to a range of services. There are entitlements to education. There's entitlements to health care. There's entitlements to social services. By entitlements, I mean actual guarantees. There's state funding, there's federal funding. Some of it's still difficult to access or which you must be aware of your entitlement, but nonetheless, those things do exist. Parents and/or guardians are required decision makers for children. And the healthcare approach is pediatric-centered. It tends to have a bit more continuity, familiarity, and really centered on not just the patient, but the family. So that's a very different change. We also, as you heard here already today, we have more data and more developed services when we're looking at children with autism. But when we move to adulthood, no longer entitlements, but eligibility. Eligibility means you can apply, but you have to meet certain requirements. And then accessing those benefits can take anywhere from weeks to months to years. I've read estimates for some eligible services. It can take up to 15 years in some communities to access those. Well, by my estimates, that means we need to start planning at age 6 to be eligible at age 21. That's a pretty steep burden to put on families. So we have eligibility for housing, health care, and employment. But again, a lot of variability here, not much consistency, not a lot of guidance. It's a pretty unwieldy system. And unless legally determined otherwise, the individual, meaning the person with autism, makes his or her own decisions. That includes refusal of care. But some of these is voting, entering into contracts, driving, taxes, marriage, all these things are now decisions in the hands of the adult with autism. And again, unless there is a legal determination of incompetence, that person has a say in all of these things, and that say includes refusing what somebody else might think is in his or her best interest. Also, we're transitioning from pediatric healthcare to something that may be much less integrated. It might be a much more difficult system to navigate. And then this exaggerates the disparities that we've already alluded to, and Kahan's going to spend some more time talking about some of the income disparities and racial disparities that we already see existing with access to services for those with autism, but these become further exaggerated when one reaches adulthood. So the lifetime costs of autism have been estimated in a number of different studies, but this is one by Gantz, which said the direct and indirect costs of caring for a person with autism across the lifespan are estimated to be greater than $3 million per capita. This not only includes healthcare direct costs, but also those indirect costs because of lost or diminished opportunities. So this is a pretty important number, and the reason we wanted to focus on this number is if we want to drive policy, unfortunately, dollars count. Dollars often drive our policymakers to say, oh, well, maybe we need to think about that a little bit more. So I think that this is a really important figure to keep in mind. This was one of the very moving essays that we read at Julie Vanderpool. She was talking about her son's transition, and I just want to read this because it is so incredibly powerful. She said, I realize it's impossible to know all of the answers, but is it too much to ask to at least know all of the questions? This is a very delicate age for Cameron, with his 18th birthday looming like a big exit sign. Should I establish guardianship? Am I limiting his independence if I do? Am I putting him at risk if I don't? Will he be able to earn a meaningful living and be able to support himself? If not, are there supports available for him aside from me? These questions weigh heavily on my mind as time seems to speed up the older Cameron gets. I'm encouraged by the pride Cameron shows in his independence and hope that pride continues to grow along with his independence. This goes to Cameron's total overall well-being, something so important when we're talking about public health more generally. So the numbers, back to numbers, because they do speak very loudly. Only half of young adults with autism have reported being paid for work, compared to nearly all young adults in the general population. And the numbers seem to be a little bit more striking for young adults with autism than other disabilities, and Kahan will get to that shortly. But the interesting point here is that the rates of employment with this population is low, even compared to other individuals with disabilities, as I mentioned. So why this matters for public health? Because employment for wages contributes not only to one's economics, but their social well-being. It's linked to positive health outcomes. It's a gateway to health insurance, and it's a factor in overall quality of life. And that's why these measurements and these social entities that we're talking about need to change and start trying to adapt, because we want to encourage that independence that Cameron feels so strongly about, and so many others who've made this transition feel has made their lives so much more meaningful.
As has been identified by our previous speaker, there's a number of barriers. There's financial barriers, there's geographic barriers. Nanette's mentioned some of the significant challenges facing young adults with autism as they're transitioning from adolescence into young adulthood. And as she mentioned, the level of employment is low compared to the general population, and it's low even compared to other young adults with disabilities. And as we see here, I mean, there are significant limitations. I mean, the jobs that are available are typically menial, low-paying, part-time, inadequately supported. And so that's the reality currently with regards to the opportunities that young individuals with autism are facing. And this is just a graphic representation from this study of family caregiving during this transition out of high school, and the pie chart on the left, basically it's kind of blurry, but if you look at the biggest segment on the pie indicates individuals with no intellectual disability. And so it says nearly 50% of the young adults with ASD without an intellectual disability were in a post-secondary degree working program, compared to 2% of those with an intellectual disability. And adults without an intellectual disability were also 3 times more likely to be competitively employed. So you see this kind of discrepancy. The people that are individuals that are higher functioning may have some access to post-secondary education. Those that are lower functioning may have some access to support services. But then there's the individuals in the middle who seem to be neglected with regards to what their needs are and what's most appropriate for them. So in our work, and part of this is, you know, our professional interest, part of this is personal. I have a child with autism who attends a therapeutic day school. We've become more interested in investigating the different kinds of programs that are available to see what's really out there. And now this is just a list of programs in our home state of Illinois. There's many other programs out there across the country. And so as you see, they focus on a variety of different things. There's academic skills, there's social skills, life skills, employment skills, and so forth. I'm just going to focus for a moment or two on this one program at National Lewis University, which has got a pretty stellar track record as far as recruiting young people with autism and other intellectual disabilities, and then putting them through this program, this training program, and then placing them in the community. And they've been around since the mid-80s. And I think what's exemplary about this program is that they do take this multi-layered focus with regards to supporting young people with autism. So they focus on academics, on career placement, on life skills, on social skills. So the whole gamut is addressed, and they have a two-year program that focuses on these kinds of skills, and then there's an additional three-year program that's more of a transition out into the workforce. And so this is a quote that I'll share with you by Ira, who is a graduate of this program. And again, it's funny, life is just kind of serendipitous. I happened to meet Ira on a Metro train station stop one day, because I was with my young son, and he's obsessed about trains, and so we met Ira on the train. And Ira told me his story about being a young person with autism, and he went through this program, and it really changed his life. And so he says here, "I can hardly believe that in less than 2 months," he wrote this several years ago, so he's in his late 20s now, "I'll be moving into my own apartment and living by myself. I never thought I could live without my parents ever. I can get anywhere I desire completely independently by Metra, CTA, Pace, or taxi. This has been my best year yet, and I have to say that I finally know what it's like to be satisfied, which is so great. At one time, I could not even cross my own street unsupervised or go anywhere locally without an adult. I have to say I've come a long way. Not long ago, I felt insecure and inferior, especially when I was unemployed. Little did I know, I'm now very happy with my job at Whole Foods Market, where I work in the deli doing food preparation and dishwashing. The benefits are excellent, and I feel accepted there. I never thought I could have a job like that, like I do now." So that's just Ira's personal narrative. He wrote this for the Autism Society of Illinois newsletter. And he's someone who, when I spoke to the director a few months ago, she said that Ira's been an amazing ambassador for this program, because he's so enthusiastic and positive about what this experience has done for him, is to equip him with these skills to make this transition into young adulthood. And so the reason why Nanette and I are really focused on this, is because of the centrality of work on our lives. And as you mentioned, how so important it is for our sense of well-being, our quality of life, our identity. Freud once famously said the two most important things in life are loving relationships and meaningful work. And this should be something that should be achievable by everyone, regardless of disability, across the spectrum. And so we were going to close with this quote by Temple Grandin, who said, "My life is basically my work. If I did not have my work, I would not have any life." And so I think it reinforces the importance for all of us as a community to work together to make sure that young adults with autism have the necessary tools and skills and abilities to make this transition as seamlessly as possible. And I think moving forward, one of the biggest challenges is to somehow develop policies that unburden families, because families tend to be the most burdened with caring for their young children, as was mentioned, but also caring for their young adults with autism. And so I think that's really the major challenge facing all of us, for those of us that care about this community, that care about these young children that are aging out of the system and hopefully will be joining us in the workforce. So thank you.